24566 real what? Real 3.
Mr. Cunningham, Real 3. So what happened when you left the holding unit around about early October? What happened then? Because you were posted across to Northwest Europe. What do you remember of this? The crossing and things?
We were in a, I think, called a landing ship infantry, and they were proud of the fact that they'd taken American Rangers across before us. And we went at an incredibly slow speed because of acoustic mines. We really didn't feel we were moving at all. I didn't like that. But it was obviously the sensible thing. And we got safely across and went to our reinforcement holding unit in Bayeux.
What was that like? What do you remember of your time at Bayeux?
Yes. Well, we played a lot of poker. And I made a lot of money because it was unusual to be sitting drinking and playing for money and having weapons lying all over the place. It seemed a bit of a funny way of going on. My colleagues were heavy drinkers and I didn't drink at all, so I found it very easy to make money at poker.
Anything else about that? You weren't there that long, were you?
No. And I also remember taking some taking some compo food to a lady's, local lady's house, and she said she hadn't any food for us because we didn't eat horse meat. And we said, well, if she cooked it the way she would do for herself, we'd be happy to eat it. So we ate very good horse meat steaks and traded in compo. I think we only did it once, but that was all we were offered.
You had no compunction about eating horse meat?
I probably had one or two of these drinks that I'm talking about. Now, if you've eaten compo long enough, you're quite happy to try some meat, even if it was camel, I think.
What's the next thing then? Your next thing is your proper posting. When you went to 61st Recce Regiment, Royal Army Corps, which was attached to 50th Div.
Which was 50 Div's Recce Regiment, because their Recce Regiment had been knocked out in the desert.
Now, do you know which troop you were attached to? Did they have a number, or do you know which troop, or was it just the armoured car troop?
No, it was an armoured car troop, but I don't know for sure which troop it was.
And what were your first impressions of them?
Well, they were very experienced, and I was very lucky to find that I had an excellent sergeant. And they were also amused to meet me because my cousin, also Cunningham, had been a driver in the troop until he was wounded. And luckily he'd been popular, and that was good from my point of view. And you can imagine how surprised he was to have a letter from me addressed using his old troop address number.
Now, did you have Humber cars with that? Was here as well?
Yes.
Now, what's the first thing you remember after you joined them then? What was the situation? Where were they when you joined them?
These are always difficult questions because they're not places, they are grid references. And if you moved off off a map, you lost interest in that map, and you're on to the next sheet or the next map, and that was all that mattered to you at that stage. And
whereabouts, roughly, then?
I suspect that I went straight to Grath, which was Grave, which is a bridge before Nijmegen.
And what's the first thing you remember then?
I remember that Grav, we were mortared every 4 hours on the dot, on the 4 hours.
What was that like? It was the first time under fire, I presume, or proper fire. How did you react?
No, I don't remember anything unusual about it. I had a big notice propped up against my car saying, "Don't go past here, you're in view of the enemy." And two RAF officers came, they wanted to see where the war was, and they went past. I don't know what happened to them. We couldn't stop them, they didn't wish to be stopped. But while we were there, a woman in the farmhouse system gave birth to a child, and they asked for help, and I sent across my married man, chap aged 20, and when he came back, he said his shut knife had opened 2,000 cans since D-Day and delivered one child.
Now, so what actual military action were you doing at the time? What was the situation?
No, we stayed in this farmhouse complex on the bridge at Grav until we moved on to Nijmegen.
And what happened there?
In Nijmegen, we went over the bridge to a place called the Island, Elst, E-L-S-T. And each night I took a troop of 101 American Airborne on the outside of my car, and we went and set up shop overlooking Driel, D-R-I-E-L.
What do you mean, set up shop?
Well, we had a system of, the Americans had their foxholes, which were two men manned, and I had my cars all round the village, so to speak, all close together. And we stayed there until daylight the next morning.
Why?
Well, we were this was the extremity of the front. And
so the positions weren't occupied during the day?
No, they weren't occupied during the day, and they were very visible to the enemy. But then at night moved back into Elst, which is the island.
Sorry, during the day you moved back to Elst?
At dawn, yes.
And I believe there's one case where there was an American was shot. Can you tell us that story?
Yes, because the two officers, the American and myself, were in the same cellar, if anybody wanted to contact us, they came into the cellar. And on one occasion a chap did come in, and then he left, and when he left there was a shot, and his buddy had been trigger happy, shot him as he came back into his own slit trench, foxhole, and they then carried him back to where the two officers, myself and the American, were, and we did our best to pacify him. I happened to have morphia with me, and I stuck it into the wound, as I had been taught, and he spent the rest of the night asleep in our cellar. I say asleep, of course, unconscious. I don't know whether he's dead or not. I don't think he was.
Were a lot of them trigger happy? Was this a risk?
It is a risk, yes, but I think they're more likely to be... No, I don't know. It's too difficult a psychological question. Anybody can be trigger happy. But I don't think we would ever shoot anybody coming back into our own slit trench.
Was it something you were aware of yourself, the risk of it?
No.
So just tell the story. Yeah.
When I reached the place where we were going to spend the night, I jumped off my car because I knew where I was, and I knew where I wanted the car to be, and I knew where my cellar was. I knew where my radio jump lead was going to be taken into the cellar, and so I jumped down. And of course I had ammunition boots on. In the recce corps we were always conscious of the fact that we could find ourselves captured, and so we always wore our best clothes, best boots, best everything else. We didn't intend to be taken prisoner of war badly dressed. And so I had boots on. As I jumped down, this American put his arm round me and said, whatever he said, "You're lucky I didn't shoot you. Only a stupid Brit would wear boots like that."
Noisy boots.
Noisy boots.
Okay, anything else you remember about this period?
It didn't affect me particularly, but I was having breakfast, having gone back in daylight. I was just talking about the fact that at dawn we moved back to our cells. And I was invited to take breakfast with the 101 Airborne head man. So the American lieutenant and myself had breakfast. And an American officer came in, I don't try to do the accent, but he reckoned he was the luckiest chap alive. He'd just thrown himself on the ground when he was mortared, and the mortar bomb didn't go off, but it landed between his two arms. And we saw him within minutes of then. He came in to have a coffee and some breakfast, and was very grateful to be alive.
Any other stories of that time? What could you see from the position at night? I mean,
well, nothing really, except that it was what you'd expect if there was a moon, and what you wouldn't expect if there wasn't a moon. And I also remembered that the Americans were experts at making flapjacks, and so there would always be somebody on duty with flour, which we would find in one of the local shops. We knew where the store was, and they would make flapjacks for us as well as for themselves. I don't think really that we liked them, if the truth's known, because they eat them without anything on them. And we tend to like something on our flapjack or chapati or whatever you want to call it. I was always conscious of the fact that when we were in Els during the day, I always had a car manned. And we always called it the guard car. And so if one chap wasn't manning it, then somebody else was, and it was up to the NCOs to make sure that one car was manned. And one day in broad daylight, one of the coax machine guns started firing.
The coax?
They're called coaxially mounted, coax, C-O-A-X. Coax. That's because we had Bren guns around the place as well, but the coax was a heavy machine gun. And one of them started firing. And of course we were very quick to look around and see what the hell was going on. But there was nobody near that car, and we couldn't work out why or what had caused this coax to start firing in our midst. Nobody was hurt. But the sort of thing one remembers.
There's one case where you went forward to the 101 observation post.
Oh, yes. That was...
What do you remember about that?
It was daylight, and we didn't normally take up the this particular location till dusk. And so the American lieutenant said, come on, let's go and see ROP, his own 101 Red Airborne OP. And it wasn't too far to go, but all these fields had been mined, and it's not very pleasant walking through an area that where there's a cow blown up on one side and there's a piece of barbed wire on another, but he'd been before, and so off we went. And lo and behold, I had a very clear view indeed of Germans on the other bank. And I realised, of course, that they could see us equally well. But my OP training and the gunners were such that I knew how important it was to approach OPs correctly and not just amble along. And so I made a great pretense of, well, not pretense at all. I was very careful how I went up to their OP. And lo and behold, I found that they got all their automatic weapons stripped down and were cleaning them and doing all the things that you wouldn't expect to do if you were in contact with the enemy. And I didn't say too much, except that, you know, is it time we were going back or something like that? Or, but are those really Germans over there? And the answer was, oh yeah, but we don't shoot at them, they don't shoot at us. But they use such foul language, you can't really you can't really say everything that
but they had a sort of non-aggressive live and let live approach.
It's on a par with their shooting their pal coming in from the
Now there's another story here about when you there was an army chaplain arriving to say mass, and you cleared bodies away. Can you just tell us that story?
We were told, I don't know how, that the Guards Armoured Division had got a Catholic chaplain, and he was going to say mass in the church in Elst on Sunday morning. And so I let my three or four Catholics know that it was going to happen. And we got there, and I found that it couldn't possibly happen because the church had been turned into a morgue, really. There were, I think, three or four dead bodies across the altar. However, I realised it was not a home of rest or whatever those places are called. It just happened that somebody had had to put the bodies somewhere and they put them in the church. So me and my soldier boys lifted the bodies out and stuck them to one side, and I told the priest what I'd done, and he thanked me.
And what's any other things you remember? It doesn't seem you're actually doing much as a unit at this time. In static positions, I mean.
Yes. I wouldn't necessarily know where the rest of the regiment was, of course. Because I would own, my troop would be trying to make sure that the squadron didn't use us more than it was using our pals. And
well, what I mean is, you were just going forward to the position, but you weren't actually doing anything. You weren't,
not during the day.
No, but in the night you weren't doing anything. You said you didn't do anything. You were just occupying the position. You weren't actually doing anything.
No. No, we weren't moving forward from there. No.
But you weren't wirelessing back corrections or OP corrections. You weren't sending reconnaissance reports back. You were just occupying the position.
Yes,
that's how it sounded.
Yes.
What about when they flooded the island, didn't they, at one point? What impact did that have on you?
Well, I was told over the air to... take up a position in a farm house near the road between Nijmegen and Arnhem. And that road we always enjoyed because it had got mile posts, kilometre posts all along it. And so you could always tell exactly what the range was of anything that you were shooting at or not shooting at. And before the flooding started, I knew they were going to flood the place.
How did you know?
I was told.
And this was the island of...
It's called Elst.
And what exactly happened then? Quite a situation to be in, really.
Yes. I parked the cars all round the farmhouse system, trying to look as inconspicuous as possible. And it was at this stage that Messerschmitt came and had a look at us. And I grabbed my Bren gun. We all had a Bren gun on the side of an armoured car. And nobody liked them because the anti-aircraft magazine carried 15 rounds as opposed to... can't remember how many the normal was, 5 I think. And it made it very unreliable. And the sergeant, my sergeant, whom I had a lot of confidence in, obviously, said, don't shoot first, sir. Because if they start to shoot us up, we wouldn't stand an earthly. So I agreed with him wholeheartedly, pulled my head down and my gun down, and the Messerschmitt flew away. A few minutes after that, we started to have the floodwaters coming in at us. And so I moved the troop out towards the main road between Nijmegen and Arnhem, but still stayed until such time as the water was impossible. And then I warned everybody to look ahead because they weren't going to see any of the drains or culverts or anything else once they were underwater, but they had got to be able to go a certain distance on what they remembered. And I went last and couldn't resist firing into Arnhem. I think really because of this excellent business of knowing the range to the nearest meter.
What business? You'd worked it out?
No, because all the way along the road was a 10 meter post or whatever. But I shouldn't have done that because I suspect that what I hit was a hospital or something like that. It was, I don't know what the hell it was. I just fired and left, and I was a bit naughty. And then.
So then you pulled back.
And pulled back and.
Now it's at this point the 50th was disbanded. What effect did that have on you? I mean, what did you think of the disbanding of the division? It was partly for morale, but it was partly because they'd had such casualties.
It was because they were running out of infantry, and so we looked as though we were going to be come infantry from then on. It was a very conceited regiment, the T's and Tynes Division 50 Div. We knew we were better than most people, which we were, and I've lost myself. Presumably we went into Nijmegen actually at that stage before going back into Belgium.
Whereabouts into Belgium?
Went to a place called Isigam, which is quite a big town, really.
Where was that place?
Isigam, I-Z-E-G, Isigam.
And what happened there? Were you attached to a new division as a recce regiment? Or?
No, we were disbanded. We were handed in the cars and took the ammunition out of the cars and took the petrol out of the cars and then... Sent the cars to an ordnance depot.
And so what happened to you?
Well, a couple of hours later, we were ordered to put ourselves together again, bomb up the cars and get petrol in and get maps and ammunition. And
what was that?
And we were sent off to... to the Meuse, if I remember right, in Dinant.
And which division were you attached to then?
No, I was still in 50 Div, because although it had been disbanded, we had nothing else to wear on our shoulders. We were still 61st Recce. The fact that we weren't working for 50 Div didn't really matter. We were still a Recce regiment. And... in fact, I didn't know it, but we were then working for 29 Armoured Brigade.
So what happened next when you got to Dinant? Would this be December?
Yes, before Christmas. And we were very conscious of the fact that the Americans, the Germans, were using people in American uniform and American vehicles. And I was given a troop of anti-tank guns in addition to my own troop of armoured cars to guard that bridge. When I'd been guarding it for a couple of days, I was told to go on to Namur, which is the next bridge further south.
And did anything happen at either of these?
No.
So what's the next thing you remember?
Well, when you read other people's books on this, there were all sorts of people were sent to these bridges, and they must have caught up with me, and at that stage I was always moved on, and I certainly didn't ever see many of these people who allegedly were there. Motor battalions from here and all sorts of people. And then I went on to the third bridge, which is in France, the Givet.
Jive.
Yeah, G-I-V-E-T.